County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for tonight's special episode of TCCP, first and foremost, is my Welsh co-host, Lucy Change the Overs Rhys. So Lucy, it's been a while, actually. I think it's almost been a month since the last time that you appeared on one of these interview episodes. It's been a long time. And I felt every single minute, to be honest, as well. We need you on the podcast more often. But Lucy, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, it's been good. Thanks for having me back. I feel like my appearances are very intermittent. I kind of appear and then disappear for about 3 weeks and then I come back.
Yeah, and there's a pattern as well. Whenever it's the Glamorgan players or former Glamorgan players, you're always here on the podcast. And when it's the Warwickshire players or the Worcester players or any other county, nowhere to be seen, Lucy. We need you on more podcasts in 2022. That's all I'll say. But joining us for tonight's episode of TCCP, talking of Glamorgan, actually, funnily enough, he's a former Glamorgan player, turned Hampshire top order batsman. We are, of course, joined by Anirudh Donald. So, Anirudh, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining us here on the podcast tonight. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. Again, I'll ask you the exact same question, mate. How's your day been so far?
Yeah, not too bad. First of all, thanks for having me on, both. I haven't been up to too much today. I'm actually recovering. I was in Dublin yesterday seeing a knee rehab specialist, so I've had a couple of good days of it. So back on and a day off, ready to go again tomorrow.
When you said Dublin, I thought you were in for the rugby or something. I know the
situation. No, I wish. I said, looking back on the schedule, we should have gone out a few days earlier, but unfortunately I went out on Monday and came back Tuesday, which is a rookie move. But I didn't miss too much on the Welsh rugby front either.
That is true. Lucy, remind us, what was the score in that?
I don't know. We don't need to talk about that. We're not on the rugby podcast. We're on the county cricket. Crack on.
Well, it was like a cricket score, wasn't it? It was 28-7.
Yeah, it was getting there.
So, that was good memory as well. I just remember that off the top of my head. But yeah, maybe a game to forget for the Welsh boys. But as you said, Lucy, rightfully so, we aren't here to discuss rugby. We're here to talk an even better sport, the wonderful game of cricket, the best sport on the planet, in our very, very unbiased opinion. And of course, any good story starts with the origin, doesn't it? As does any tale in the world of professional sport. So, Anirudh, what were your first ever memories of cricket, really? You know, in terms of watching or playing the game, what kind of drew you into cricket in the first place?
Sure. Funny enough, this ties back to rugby. Down at my local rugby club is also my local cricket club. Come from quite a heavy rugby background, especially my father's side. So I was down there maybe one day after training and saw a game going on across the other pitch in an oval field rather than a rectangular one, and kind of wandered across. And that's kind of where it all started for me. So Gosseinen Cricket Club is my local club down in Swansea. And I think I kind of headed over there about 10 years old. And, you know, here we are a few years later.
A few years later, appearing on the County Cricket Podcast.
Yeah, exactly. My career's peaked.
Yeah, it has. On a Wednesday night in February 2022. Yeah. Funny how life works.
Absolutely.
Now,
yeah. True that.
But Lucy, actually, is it called Gosseinen? Is that correct pronunciation?
Yeah, not bad.
It's not too
Welsh. I could have made it a bit harder, but it's one of the easier ones.
Gosseinen. How about that?
Gosseinen. Yeah, there we go. We'll go with that. I appreciate the Welsh accent attempt.
We do try here on the County Cricket Podcast. Lucy, are you familiar with them as a club in South Wales?
Yeah, I am actually, yeah.
Are they good?
Yeah, they're kind of up there, yeah. So they're playing Premier League at the minute. Yeah, they are. And I remember a couple of years back when we were playing in the South Wales Cricket Association against them. But yeah, they've always been a club that's kind of up there.
Are they better?
Yeah, we've always done.
Britain Ferry Steel, though.
Yeah, sadly they are, yeah.
There we go. Wow. I respect that. Takes a big person to admit that.
Yeah, it does.
Hopefully this won't go too far.
With my local village club, I'd say we're better than pretty much everyone except Warwick.
I'm trying to think if I played at Britain Ferry Steel. If I have, it's been a long time ago. I might have graced the pitch once.
The hallowed turf.
Yes. Both Britain Ferries, actually. They're very remarkable grounds.
See, I've clearly never
been. Character about them, yeah.
But one that myself and Lucy, we have a bit of an in-joke about, because, again, talking of Welsh pronunciation, I have butchered it in the past, but is it Dravac?
Oh, here we go.
Have you played there?
Yes, I have, actually.
He's obsessed with this club.
I think this was actually where I scored my first ever 100. I think Dravac was. So if you want to really dig in deep, yeah, it's nice, you know, some good memories back in the day.
Go on, Nye, please. We're all in.
Well, I'm trying to say, I haven't played years ago. It must have been, you know, an under 12s or 13s. I think it was like a cup T20 or something. Kind of one of those games where I'd been playing a lot of representative cricket. So I kind of rocked up to help out a little bit. And that's where it started off. My first ever 100.
It's, again, going on to that theme of it's weird how life works out. You know,
yeah, exactly. So full circle again.
All those conversations, Lucy, about Britain Ferry Steel and Dravac Cricket Club in South Wales and the South Wales Cricket Association have all led to this exact moment.
Here we go, folks. you'll have to go and visit one day. It's a good day out.
I will. I'll have to visit.
That's some South Wales cricket tour, that is.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Got to get them all in there. Newport as well. Newport Cricket
Club. There we go. Good wicket there. I don't mind that.
Oh, yeah. It's a lovely wicket, isn't it? That's at the... Is it the sports complex? You two all know this.
It is now, yeah.
Yeah,
it's by the velodrome now, isn't it?
Wow. Again, I'll have to go. I'll have to go.
Yeah, that's what I say. Book some time off.
But I think that's a nice way, actually, to kickstart the podcast, isn't it? Talk about South Wales, giving the grassroots a bit of a shout-out, actually. It's something that we do like to do here on the podcast. Absolutely. Because it's important to you know, acknowledge and accept your roots. You know, we all come from somewhere, and yes, they might not be the biggest clubs in the country necessarily. But look at the journey which has followed since those tentative years. So big up to all of those clubs that we've just mentioned. Again, if you're in the local vicinity and you want to go and watch them, feel free to do so this summer.
Pop down.
Exactly. I might do as well, to be honest. Yeah, this might be some inspiration for me. But in those earlier years, Nye, who in the world of cricket itself did you almost try to emulate and model your game off of per se? Did you have any role models or icons or influences in the game that really stood out to you in those earliest of years?
Yeah, I think like many, you know, the kind of time I got into it was almost dead on the 2005 Ashes. I was kind of about 9 or 10 years old. I'm sure you've heard this one many a time before, but that literally coincided my kind of first real experiences with cricket. And I'm sure I sat down with my brother and watched that box set a few times back in the day. And that kind of really what kickstarted it for me. Obviously seeing a Welshman flying the flag there and Simon Jones. But, you know, for my end, it was KP, has been and always will be. I know he's a controversial character to some, but I'm not sure anyone can argue with what he did on the pitch and how he inspired a kind of generation of batters and, you know, the way we wanted to play the game. And hopefully, you know, if you kind of have half a career a bloke like that does, then you're on the right track.
Yeah, supremely talented cricketer. Obviously, does divide opinion because of the way in which he, you know, he tweets, for example, on Twitter.
Of course.
Especially.
Yeah, he's in the media game too, so we all know how it is.
Unfortunately, Kevin doesn't share our love of county cricket, but he was a great player. That's something which...
So he's mentioned.
Yeah, on many occasions. But you can't deny he was a fantastic cricketer and, again, did inspire a generation, as did the rest of that 2005 team. And you mentioned the box set. No, it's funny you mentioned that because it seems like everyone on the circuit has that at this point. Did you keep it? Have you still got it?
That's a great question. I think I need to ask my brother. I'm sure it's hanging around in the house somewhere. I'll have to try and dig it out next time I get back home. But we put a few hours into that. That was some good watching. Don't make it like that anymore, do they?
No. Very, 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 very good series. Iconic series. Lucy, we'll have to do that one day. Ash's 2005 box set watch along. On the podcast, get some famous faces on. That'll be
live YouTube stream, surely.
Some good content here on the County Cricket Podcast. But mentioning that series, 2005, it has been brought up. And yes, we do bring it up a lot here on the podcast. In fact, I have been thinking about rebranding us to the 2005 Ashes Podcast because it comes up so frequently. But must be trademarked.
It literally comes up every podcast I'm on.
I know. I'm sorry I answered the question. Sorry, I should have come up with something more exciting. That's all I've got for you.
No, it's absolutely fine. Now, of course it is. Any excuse to talk about that incredible series, look, I'll grab the opportunity with both hands, because it was a remarkable series and one which has clearly had a massive influence on the game of cricket in this country. The fact that it's brought up almost every single podcast episode shows just how extensive and far-reaching the impacts of that are felt even to this day. So if you could go back in time to 2005, relive one day or one moment of that extraordinary series, which day would you choose and why?
Oh, well, I'm not a great one for remembering specifics. I couldn't really tell you about a scorecard from a couple of months ago. I said I was a proper KP fanboy back in the day. So obviously his knock of 150 over was kind of sealed by then, wasn't it? But yeah, and that shot obviously off Brettley, the one over I think it was the pavilion. I can't quite remember where it was, but those are the kind of things that stuck in my mind. And certainly, you know, that was kind of inspiration for how I like to think about, I go about batting. You know, it's just pure entertainment. And I think that's the reason why everyone caught on and it caught fire. Another reason, arguably, is obviously it was on free-to-air TV, which is quite helpful. And I think we're starting to see the benefits of that, especially off the 100 last year, and even more so in the women's game. And hopefully, you know, English cricket will have its day again after that 2019 World Cup final. It really kick-started that kind of flame again. And, you know, you look for the kind of those series and tournaments and matches and players that were kind of really, really kickstart generations. And hopefully there's a few of them to come down the line.
100%. That is the entire point of these series and tournaments, is to kickstart the next generation of cricketers in this country. And Lucy, I have to ask you as well, from that series, I know we were a bit young, to be honest, in 2005. I mean, I didn't watch it live personally. I was only 4 years old. But in terms of that series, looking back on it, Lucy, if you could relive one day, which day would you choose and why?
Oh, I'm trying to think. I don't know, probably any of KP's innings, as Nye said. You know, he was just exceptional. What I'd do to see him play cricket properly again.
See, I'm surprised with you two. In fact, no, you even mentioned Simon Jones. What about Old Trafford?
Yes, I know.
Reverse swing delivery to Clark.
I'm going to get in trouble. Yeah. If this gets out there, he's going to shout at me. I will shout that one out. Him hitting Michael Clark's off stump, and I can still hear the sound now. That's probably actually a clip that does stand out. But I apologise, that wasn't the first one that came to mind. I'm a batter, so I've got an excuse.
Fair enough. I mean, that's up there. Edgbaston as well.
Yeah, I said you're speaking to the wrong brother. I said if my brother was on here, he could talk to you about hours for each day and each ball bowls. But that's not really how my mind works.
Fair enough, Nye. Who knows though? One day this might be the catalyst. You know, you might be an absolute badger.
Here we go. Hopefully not too much. Right, I won't give it away in public anyway.
Undercover badger, as we know them on the podcast, lurking in the shadows.
But yeah, Nye, there's a few of them.
Yeah, there are. There's a lot in county cricket. There really are. We're uncovering them one by one here on the County Cricket Podcast.
Exposing them.
People who say, we're not that much of a badger. And then you tell them one stat and they're like, oh yeah, I've got another stat for you.
Yeah, exactly.
But in terms of that incredible series, 2005, right, would you say that was the moment that cricket really clicked for you? Was that the catalyst which sparked your journey into becoming a professional cricketer? Or was there another moment where you kind of, you know, look back and think that was the moment where I made up in my mind that I wanted to do this for a career?
I certainly think it was my catalyst into cricket, you know, by A, pure coincidence, but also B, kind of just timing of my age. I was kind of getting to 9 or 10. I used to kind of start expanding into other sports. And, you know, in terms of, I think if you asked anyone when I was growing up, I'd have told you from about 10 or 11 years old that I was going to play professional sport. I wouldn't have necessarily said it was cricket at that time. Enjoyed my rugby, you know, for quite a long time until I was about 15, where I kind of had to make a bit of a choice. And I like to think, looking back, I've made the right one. But yeah, it's you know, I said that timing, it was, you know, I was 9 or 10 as that Ashes came on. And that was kind of it for me. I was kind of fell in love there. And just generally any sport I like to try my hand at. And certainly, you know, that even from a young age, I knew I was going to play sport. And I kind of, you know, almost fell into the right path of cricket. I was really lucky with, you know, at the time, and it still is, that the pathways through the age groups in Welsh cricket were really good. Played, you know, local club, then South Wales, and then West Glamorgan all the way up to Wales. And, you know, the kind of funnel was there. The, you know, the pyramid really did work at the time. And fortunately, I kind of made it through to the Glamorgan and Academy and onto, you know, the ECB stuff quite quickly. And, you know, it was that progression and ability to kind of see your career progressing for kind of in front of you that really, you know, attracted me towards the end. And certainly, you know, I felt a lot to thank for Glamorgan, but people way before that, down to the one indoor laning beside that I like to think kind of made me the player I am today.
Absolutely. Again, it's that cricket journey, isn't it? And I'm glad, Noy, that you brought up Glamorgan County Cricket Club, because this is a perfect place for my Welsh co-host to pick up the conversation, obviously. Our resident Glamorgan fan here on the Counts Cricket Podcast. Lucy, I know you've got a lot of questions for Noy, actually, for tonight's episode. But Noy, just before we get on to Lucy's questions, actually, in terms of that pathway, for those who maybe aren't as familiar with it, could you just give us some insight into how it actually works? So how did you go from club cricket to Glamorgan first 11 cricket in that Welsh pathway system?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how it works in England, but I'm assuming it follows pretty similar steps. So went down to my local club, probably played a bit of a season there, and you kind of get nominated to go and trial for, I think, South Wales and West Glamorgan. So that's my area. Wales is broken up into about six areas, I want to say, off the top of my head, roughly. And, you know, each age group, you'd play X number of games against each other, and there was always a residential series somewhere dotted across Wales in a specific town or city, depending on the age group. So, you know, you kind of start to work your way through that. So that was probably up until 13 or 14. And the Glamorgan EPP kind of started, which is kind of my first contact with Glamorgan at the time. That was run by the late, great John Derrick, who was kind of like the first kind of pathway coach into that centre for me. And that kind of cracked on from there. You know, once I got my foot in the door with Glamorgan, the kind of Bunbury festivals come about, so that, you know, southwest of England is which where Glamorgan come under that part. You attend the Bunbury festival, and I think it was the Super Sixes they used to call it, or Super Fours, and then that progressed into, you know, the England age group. So at the time we were, you know, an under 15 side, and throughout there you kind of crack on to all the way through to 19s. And at that point I was kind of on the academy, and I was fortunate to play Wales minor counties very young. I think I played, you know, when I was probably around about 15, maybe. That was kind of my first foray into kind of representative men stuff. And then, you know, I was playing second team pretty regular then from 15, 16 onwards, really. And made my debut ultimately at 17. So, yeah, it's quite I had a bit of kit to kind of hide around the house. My parents still do to this day. There's a few kit bags full of representative gear, but that was all part of the fun. And, I was fortunate that the pyramid was so good, you know, if showed some sort of talent at some stage, it was very difficult to kind of miss that net. And fortunately, I kind of had all the opportunity along the way.
So looking at your kind of first class career so far, what do you remember from your debut at Glamorgan?
Yeah, well, funny enough, it was obviously when Hampshire won the Division 2 title. So it sticks in memory, and the boys like to rib me every now and again. It was an interesting game. I remember James Tomlinson, who's one of our academy bowling coaches now, he took a seven for one innings on left arm seam round and through, which was the first time I think I've ever seen that, and the last time I've ever seen it. I also remember I got out caught twice in the hook, so not much has changed there. It was a surreal experience. You know, it was the first time I got on the end of a James Vince innings, and now fortunately I'm on the right side of that. But you know, from then on, I was playing. Imran Tahir was there overseas at the time, so yeah, some really important memories. And you know, the guys who started moving on from the game, you know, Jimmy Adams played, who's now our assistant coach. On the other side, you know, Mark Wallace is back in the fold at Glamorgan. He was my first captain. And, you know, it's starting to see these faces not in playing kit and now in, you know, kind of behind the scenes as well. It feels like I'm over the hill a little bit at 25. Career's on the downslope now officially.
Funny you mentioned Mark Wallace. We've had him on the podcast. Lucy, in fact,
you
were there for that one, weren't you?
Yeah, he did it from his car, if I remember correctly.
Of course, yeah. He's a DOC now. That's all he does is call people on the phone.
What was he doing? He was at a second team game at Newport and it was raining and he said, I've got a podcast, I'm going to do it in the car.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
It most certainly was. Good episode, though, Mark Wallace. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, very.
And yeah, Noy, actually, talking of your debut, because I have got the scores in front of me. James Vince just scoring the 144.
Yeah, which, I think it was my first half catch. I think I caught him on that. If I'm throwing out my badger stats.
You are the undercover badger.
Yeah.
We've got we said this. Maybe about my debut. You name one and then they start them. This is happening.
Yeah, you just got to start me off.
Exactly. But, well, this will actually test the inner badger. We've seen there one of the layers of badger. Right, let's see if there's another layer. Do you remember your exact scores, Noi, from that day?
I got out to Matt Coles in the first innings, caught hooking by the bowler's stumps. So I think I was about five. I got off the mark, I specifically remember, but I think it was probably five. Second innings, I got about a runnable 50, but I wouldn't know specifically the number. So I'm going to guess, just over maybe 52.
It's actually more than that. You got four in the first innings. Oh, there we go. Four from 16.
Oh, that's close.
And 59 from 60 in the second.
There we go. Respectable start then, averaging 30 odd.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's my grassroots cricket debut, and I scored four.
I didn't well, exactly. You remember that as well.
To be fair, that is for my club who I just signed for last season. So
there we are.
I've got no excuse to forget that. It was less than a year ago.
Really? There we go then.
Obviously, from those humble beginnings, Noi, so that debut, that was in 2014. In 2016, you made history for Glamorgan yet again in Division 2 of the 2016 County Championship. Noi, before I go into more detail about the context surrounding this in terms of the records and the stats that you broke as a result of this innings, what do you remember from that game against Derbyshire at Colwyn Bay in the 2016 County Championship?
Yeah, it's obviously a day, fortunately, I get asked about a lot, and obviously it tops up my ego when it's needed. It's obviously such a special day for more reasons than one. I think what stands out is obviously it's a classical county outground with some real history and kind of some sort of feel about it. We had a great crowd there, probably a lot more so than usual compared to county championship games. Again, a couple of thousand in a small club ground. It was a really special place to play. But in terms of the innings itself, I've been asked many a time. I think the best way to describe it is I was just in the zone. It kind of feels like a bit of a blur where there wasn't much thinking going on. It was just pure reaction. And, that's probably why it obviously came off so well. But, it was a good day and it was a good week. I think the main thing I take from it actually, bar the records, was my first championship 100 and, the first kind of real statement saying, look, I can perform at this level and not only hold my own, but I can really dominate and kind of assert myself on the professional game.
Well, you most certainly did. Yeah, again, just for the listeners out there who don't know exactly what we're talking about, 234 from 136 balls, 26 fours, 15 sixes, the double century coming up in 123 balls, which at the time in 2016 was the joint fastest double century in first class history. And Noi, I'm guessing you know exactly who you actually tied with for that record, but again, if you could just give the listeners some insight, because funny enough, he used to play for Glamorgan.
He did, yes. Back in the day, it was Ravi Shastri. Obviously, once a name like that was mentioned, I got quite a lot of media attention, especially from the subcontinent. But, it was helpful playing on a really good wicket at a club ground that had 50 meter boundaries all the way around. But yeah, it was a pretty good day.
I can imagine it was. And again, with that, with regards to that that knock from Ravi Shastri, I've got the stats from that as well. Again, his was a 123-ball double ton for Bombay, who are now called Mumbai, in the Ranji Trophy against Baroda in the 1985 Ranji Trophy. Now, this record, though, has since been broken. It was broken in 2018. Do you know by who, Noi?
I don't. I have heard this. All I remember, I think someone mentioned it, saying I'm no joint world record holder anymore a while ago. I'm not sure if it was some maybe first class game in Afghanistan or something like that. Am I about right there?
Yeah, correct.
There we go. I thought so.
It was Shafiqullah, the Afghan wicketkeeper, in 2018. Really? It's an 89 ball double century Cavill region. 89
there we
balls.
Go. He deserves it then. I thought I was. If someone had told me at the time that I was sharing the record, I'd try to swing a bit harder, a bit sooner. So I had it to myself. But I think he's won that one fair and square.
That is a remarkable knock, isn't it? 89 balls. Think of the strike rate. That's, it's well over
that
200.
Is something. I was about to say that's something.
That's absolutely terrifying.
He deserves that one.
I'll tell you what you still have, though, Nye. The fastest ever county championship doubleton.
There we go. I can revel in that for a little bit longer.
Yeah. You most certainly can. And in terms of the opposite of this, because so far we've spoken mostly about highlights and proud moments. As we all know, in the game of cricket, it's not that simple, is it? Especially when you're batting, it's very much a game of ups, downs, peaks, troughs. It's like a roller coaster. That's what we liken it to here on the County Cricket Podcast. From your time at Glamorgan, what do you say was your toughest moment, your lowest point at the club? Is there any particular moment in time which was tremendously difficult for you during your time at Sapphire Gardens?
Look, there were tougher times, as you suggested, bits of poor form and certainly parts where I didn't feel like my game was improving. I wouldn't point back. I think I've said in a pretty similar interview the other day that, I'm kind of quite naturally a bit of the optimist. It takes a lot to kind of really, really rattle me in that sense. And there was certainly not one point that I could point to and say that, that was my worst day on the pitch, hardly. I think I've always been pretty aware of the fact that I'm doing something I love for a living and effectively hitting the ball around the field and getting paid to do it. So I was really fortunate. I had a pretty great support network around me from family through to friends and other players at Glamorgan. And I always loved my time there. Luckily, there was points where I felt like my game went a little bit backwards. And, I think everyone's probably had that kind of part of their career. Fortunately, I was presented with an opportunity to go to a huge county like Hampshire and, barring the troubles of the last couple of years on the injury front, that first year down there, I think it really proved why. Hampshire's such a great club and a great setup. And, within a month or two of being there, I think we were in a 50-over final and I kind of averaged 40 in Division 1 and, the grass is greener again. But, yeah, it's something you just got to deal with. And, I was really lucky. Glamorgan gave me every opportunity from, I'm making my debut at 17. That I had more opportunity than sometimes I probably deserved. But all the support and it's one of those things. I'm sure I've said and many other people have said, I've always felt like playing for Glamorgan is like playing for Wales, and playing for England is like playing for the British Lions. So it was always a treat and something I cherish. And I'm always pretty in regular contact with the guys back there and having a chat to them.
Well, that is excellent to hear, Nye. It really is. Again, going back to that, what we were talking about earlier with regards to recognising your roots, because, again, that's where your professional roots are, Glamorgan County Cricket Club. And they are a fantastic county, obviously the reigning champions of the Royal London One Day Cup after winning the trophy in 2021. And it is a special club. I mean, we've mentioned this with a lot of Glamorgan players, because when you think of the other counties, the other 17 are in England, you're not representing an entire nation. Whereas with Glamorgan, that's exactly what you're doing, isn't it?
I think the Yorkies might argue different on that front, but it's certainly that. As I said, that's the difference. I think compared to guys from other counties and other professionals, there's always going to be a kind of a link for me there back home. From a countrywide, but also family and roots. It's where I grew up. It's my country where I'm born and bred. And as you said, it felt like an international cap every time we played for them. So. Certainly from my end, if at the time, my game was moving forward and everything was falling into place and we were winning the championship every year and the T20 and et cetera, I'd have stayed there for 25 years and captain and walked off into the sunset. But unfortunately, sport doesn't quite work like that. And I'm really lucky to kind of go from one test ground to another down in Hampshire where I had some great friends down here already. And, it's hardly a tough life living on the South Coast with a team that's competing on all fronts. I think you just have to look at last year to kind of really show that. And as professional sport, it's a matter of opportunity and it's kind of one of those things, you're right time, right place. So I'm always thankful for my time there and certainly have great roots back there. And, some of my best friends still play at the club and are involved around the club. Funny enough, my brother just back, he's now working there and My first captain, Mark Wallace, is back in charge, and you know, a couple of good childhood friends are still on the playing staff. So it's someone I'll always be connected to, regardless of where I end up. But you know, I'm thankful for my English home now down on the South Coast, and it's been a great time of it down here, even though quite a lot of it's been from the sidelines, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, and we'll touch upon that in due course, obviously, as the podcast progresses. Just for the listeners out there who are wondering where Lucy's gone, Lucy's had a little bit of connection issues, but hopefully, yeah, fingers crossed, she will be back in due course. So hopefully we'll be hearing the dulcet tones of my Welsh co-host at some point in the podcast, as soon as her internet connection does improve. But Nye, before we get onto the chats about Hampshire, just one final, quite profound question, to be honest, about Glamorgan County Cricket Club. You mentioned there about circumstance, and obviously the club at the time wasn't winning trophies. They weren't having that success, I suppose, as compared to 2021, lifting the Royal London One Day Cup. In hindsight, after, you know, moving, going down to Hampshire, having spent a few years now, in hindsight, do you almost wish that things would have turned out differently at Glamorgan? Let's say if the club was more successful at the time, let's say you were, you know, banging runs left, right and centre, do you think you would have stayed at the club or not?
You know, that's a difficult one to sit here and answer. I think, as I said, if everything had fell into place, you know, we might have a different conversation, but that's not professional sport and that's not what's happened. Ultimately, you know, at the time we'd been in Division Two for a long time. You know, we did make a finals day, and they had one of 40 over and 50 over cup a while back, but, contractual, you know, my contract started running down, and you know, I had opportunities from, I think, what you'd, if you look at the way the counties are set up now, there certainly seems to be a larger gap between Division One and Division Two. I think that's pretty difficult to argue. And certainly, once I had interest from these kind of clubs at that time, it was kind of a no-brainer for my personal career. Certainly, putting, you know, off the field stuff aside, you know, just looking purely at my cricketing career and where I wanted to go, and to, you know, to try and break into the next step, whether that's the English line, the full England side. I felt like I needed a move and a change, and, you know, fresh set of circumstances, and certainly a move into Division One. It's kind of, as everyone knows, it's been reported for years, it's certainly very helpful to have that on your resume. And I think when you go down to the Aegeus Bowl, I'm not sure if you've ever made it down there, but when you turn up and see all the facilities, and actually we just announced our plans for the expansion of the ground in the next couple of years, it's going to be an incredible place to be. And it has been. And fortunately, I had some good connections down here. And, you know, in terms of moving my game forward, it was a no-brainer once the opportunity came along.
Fair enough. It is a nice ground, to be fair. I do like the Aegeus Bowl. Very, very
nice. Beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm going to be biased and say Edgbaston's better. Sorry, Hampshire fans. But
they have I'll give you the best change rooms in English county cricket by a long way.
Everyone says
that. I will give you
that.
And finals day is pretty impressive setup. But you can't wander out of bed from the Hilton Hotel in the morning, can you, and stand on your balcony?
That's
true. Watch a bit of county cricket.
Who knows? Maybe in the future, we have got some redevelopment at Edgbaston coming.
There we go. That'd be impressive.
We'll have to wait and see. Maybe a Hilton or just trying to think if
there's any other hotel chains are available.
Yep. They most certainly are. But yeah, it's funny you mentioned about Division Two, though. We'll just say in 2022, the standard of Division Two is going to be very, very difficult, because you think you got Notts in there. Glamorgan have got Marnus Labuschagne. They got Michael Neeser. They got Michael Hogan, who, of course, veteran here in county cricket. You got Durham, with the likes of Rushworth, Matt Salisbury. You got the likes of Bryden Carse in there, Mark Wood potentially, if he's not on England duty. You got Alex Lees, Beddingham playing for them as well.
Some good size. I think in terms of, you know, while I was talking about the gap in Division One and Division Two, it's probably more of a depth thing. I think the great thing about county cricket is, you know, you could be in theory the 18th of the 18 counties, but, you know, everyone has an elite overseas, if not two. Certainly a few years ago when Cole Packs were involved, you know, I certainly made whatever your feelings were on that rule, certainly made the standard higher across the counties. You know, it felt like you could have a couple of Cole Packs, and, you know, as local players, it felt like you're playing with five overseas, which only brought the standard up. I say that's another controversial one, but I think the difference when we talk about it between Division Two and Division One is just, you know, depth across all forms. It's, certainly, you know, the next man up, if there's an injury to a key player, how can you replace them? I think that's more the difference. And certainly when you face a bowling attack, you know, I feel like everyone's got a couple of international level guys, regardless of whether I said in whatever division you're in, but certainly in Division One, in my short experience of it, it's kind of non-stop, you know, all four bowlers. You can play against teams that have, you know, four international bowlers and with their fifth part-time also being one of those. So I think that's ultimately what we mean in the kind of the gap between Division One and Division Two, is the relentlessness and kind of the depth. But, you know, I think everyone's kind of got quality players. I think every club's already got guys who can play right at the top level. It's just, you know, kind of how many guys can fall into place and back that up once the injuries hit, or once the season kind of gets into the depths of August and September.
Well, to be fair, I think Hampshire definitely tick that box, don't they? They've got some ridiculous
depth. We like to think so.
At the moment, oh, they have that bowling attack down at the Aegeus Bowl. Keith Barker, obviously. I love Keith. He's been on the podcast as well. Great bloke.
He's a bear hero, isn't he?
He is, and he's
not only cheated him, still owes him a couple of beers. I think they had a good partnership going there for a long time. A couple of championships in that belt.
And Royce. Oh, G-San. Brilliant.
Yeah.
You got Keith Barker, the experience. Brad Wheel continues to impress. He's been going from strength to strength.
Yeah. It's great to see him out on the park for a full year last year. That was huge for us.
100%. Again, we've had him on the podcast. Kyle Abbott. Yeah. Someone we haven't had on the podcast, but would love to get on one day.
We can make that work, I'm sure.
Hey, fingers crossed. We'll ask him nicely. Yeah. I'll try and send some emails or DMs out to Carl Abbott, try and get him on to the podcast.
Get in touch with his people.
Yeah, but he's been a revelation down on the South Coast. I think back to that game in Somerset in 2019. Ridiculous bowler. Yeah. Took a 17 for...
That was something to be a part of. Funny enough, my last game in that I played, so that sticks to the memory quite well. But you know, I said I'm sure you're about to come on to Mo Abbas as our overseas as well. But you know, Mo Abbas and Kyle Abbott, it felt like our second team change bowlers are never going to get the ball at some points, especially in early April. Just it never seen anything quite like it. The two perfect guys to kind of open an attack in England, I think, arguably.
I'd say they're up there. I mean, we've said it on the podcast, myself and Joe, we've had a lot of debates about this on the pod. And obviously, well, I suppose we might both be quite biased, but I'm guessing for you, Noy, Abbas and Abbott, the best two opening bowlers in county cricket right now as a duo.
I think it's hard to look past, isn't it? I think everyone's got some great bowlers, but in terms of if you had to kind of put your mortgage on it in any condition, but specifically in English conditions, early season with a Duke ball, the blokes never miss. It feels like the ball's never going to miss the stump or the edge. And I think obviously it was a huge part of our title kind of challenge last year, but unfortunately couldn't quite get over the line.
Whereas we did as well.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And he deserved it.
It was a great was well far deserved. Race though. So was. Good, wasn't it? Between well, basically it was four counties, even Notts were in it, to be honest, towards the last stages. They had a fantastic comeback in the divisional stage, but Warwickshire, Lancashire, Hampshire desperately vying for that first championship since 1973, almost did it. And to be fair, you hammered us at Edgbaston.
Specifically, that last week, we remember, I think Briggsy got you boys that batting point. We sat there short, thinking, surely that couldn't happen. I'm sure I'm going to set you off on a tangent now. I can't quite remember all the specifics. It was getting really complicated that last day or two. I remember watching and we thought, surely this can't happen. And I believe it was Briggsy and I can't remember who else, but they got that kind of point that really forced us to create a result rather than kind of having a lot more in our favour.
Yeah, it was. It was Danny Briggs smacking that six, the extra batting bonus point, because we had a collapse.
I couldn't believe it. We had a ball or two to go.
Last wicket partnership as well, him and Miles. Fantastic day. But that's why we love the championship so much. You know, for all of the flack and fire that's come under since the defeat in the Ashes, the 4-0 against Australia, you can't deny that in the last decade or so, some of the finishes of the championship, think of this year, think of 2016 with Toby Rowland-Jones and that hat-trick.
Yeah.
Middlesex, think back to 2010 and 2011 as well, with Lancashire beating Somerset final day of the season in Taunton. Like, for all of its flaws, and it does have weaknesses, and there are places where it can be improved, but the championship as a product, you can't deny it's not fascinating cricket. It's brilliant. It's so engrossing as a fan. And I imagine as a player, it's also very, very rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a true test of your skills across all conditions, all types of styles of play. And, you know, whoever wins it at the end of the year always deserves it. Certainly last year, I think from the player's perspective, it's not an ideal setup, nor is it a great reflection of performances across the year. And with that three division county. However, lest we forget, the only reason we get to play this wonderful game professionally is because people pay to watch. We're entertainers. And certainly that was something that county championship was. And it shows just how alive and thriving it is. Like I'm sure we can sit here and argue about why the international team has failed on the test front for a little bit. But I think county cricket largely has this kind of ducks in a row now. There's going to be, they always tweak it and trying to find the way to improve. And look, there's something I'm sure that's going to be on the horizon, a slight change. But ultimately, it's, as you said, it's producing finishes like that and making sure people are coming back and watching. And, you know, last year, with all its pros and cons, I don't think you can ever argue for, I don't think there's ever been a five-team finish on the last day. And nor will there ever will be again, I'd suspect.
No, it's great entertainment. It really was as a fan. At the time, maybe not so enjoyable, but looking back, very, very
stressful.
Enjoyable indeed. Oh, yeah, ridiculous. No nails left at all. Palms perspirating very, very heavily. But no, great, great occasion and a fantastic season, which will live long in the memory for many clubs, actually. I mean, look at Warwickshire, first championship in 9 years. You had Kent winning the Blast for the first time in 14. You had Glamorgan, their first trophy since 2004, winning the Tote Sport Cup under the leadership of Robert Croft. 2021 was a fantastic season, and 2022 has definitely got a lot to live up to. So we'll have to wait and see how things pan out in this upcoming season. Yeah. But we have gone slightly off topic there, to be honest, Nigel. I wanted to really focus on Hampshire, if I may, because, you know, that is your current club. We've spoken a lot about Glamorgan. And I know that the Hampshire fans will want to know a bit more about your journey on the South Coast so far. So we've alluded to already what was going on with Glamorgan at the time and in terms of the way in which you felt and needing that career switch. What was it about Hampshire County Cricket Club which drew you in the first place? And I suppose, what were your first impressions of the club once you made that move?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you just look at the facilities, you know, just, not just the stadium itself, hosting international cricket, but the second team ground we have attached. Obviously, the coaching staff down there and et cetera, is quite easy to look at, you know, the golf course and the hills. And I thought, it'd be quite a nice place to go and spend a bit of time, wouldn't it? I think ultimately, looking back and now having a bit of time to digest it, speaking to the guys I knew down there, so obviously really good friends with Mason and Brad Taylor and Joe Weatherly, guys that kind of grew up with and played for years and years on end, kind of getting their inside scoop. But I think the biggest difference was playing in a side where we had multiple guys, if not nearly most of the 11, competing to play international cricket or, you know, trying to kick on to that next stage. When I think just unfortunate, the more we never really had that kind of guy on the fringes, you know. I came down and we had Vince and Dawson and at the time we had Russo and Abbott and, you know, all these guys, Stain, Fidel Edwards. Like, I felt like when I slotted in that side, I was the only one to have not have an international cap, pretty much. And certainly seeing, I think that kind of being around that group and guys having that kind of carrot in front of them, you know, the whole vibe changes, the intensity of training and how serious kind of, you know, the each match meant and just getting a score. And I think that can only drive you up and drive you forward as a cricketer. And, you know, I like to think in my short time playing, it certainly, you know, lifted me up to that level with them, I thought, you know, in the few games I played.
Absolutely. Again, it's a very positive thing to have in terms of that growth mindset. You know, you're playing alongside international superstars. It's bound to rub off on you. Of course it is. Absolutely. You know, you get inspired. You look at how they do things day to day. If you implement those things, you're going to become a better cricketer. And that applies to any sport, to be honest. It's not just cricket. You can say the same about football, rugby, American football, basketball. When you look at the real, you know, the superstars, the international icons, you learn a lot from them. You learn an awful lot. Definitely. And that is what's very good about county cricket. It's that opportunity to rub shoulders with the best of the best. And in terms of your playing time, which has admittedly been a lot shorter than you would have wanted, Nye, of course, in an ideal world, you would have had multiple seasons of being on the field for Hampshire. But yeah. During your playing time so far, what would you say has been your real proudest moment? I can think of one knock in particular. In 2019, this was at the Aegeus Bowl against my county, which I remember very, very vividly, as does Ian Holland, when we had him on the podcast. Would you say that was your proudest moment, or would something else top it?
Yeah, I think so. Again, on a similar note to what I said earlier, it's, I moved to a new county, a new club. I've kind of uprooted and moved down there, and I'm in a new dress room, and guys I don't necessarily know as well as I have done, or coaches that don't necessarily know me as well, nor a fan base. And that first knock where I felt like, you're kind of again showing, right, I deserve to be here. Hopefully kind of being a bit eye-opening to the guys around me, saying, Jesus, this is the kind of guy we want in our team. I think fortunately it's kind of always been a part of my game. I think on my day I'm probably as good as anyone. It's just about the lack of consistency sometimes in between those innings that I need to clean up, and that will kind of what's take me on. But certainly that knock against Warwickshire, but generally kind of that performance for me in red ball cricket specifically, where I think just naturally by the way I play, I kind of get not pigeonholed, but people would think I'd be quite white ball heavy. My record's probably better in red ball cricket, and to kind of come in and average almost 40 in my first year, in between kind of that lineup, I batted in to kind of force my way in and cement myself on that side. That's quite a proud moment, and certainly felt like it kind of made that move really worthwhile, and kind of thought, I'm glad I made this decision.
Yeah, it's a great knock. It was a fantastic knock. I remember that quite vividly. And the game as a whole, fantastic game of cricket, wasn't it? Yeah. Down on the South Coast, you had your 173. Again, there's a pattern here. When you go big, the strike rate seems to be quite quick. 173 from 144 balls, 21 fours, 5 sixes, in a 262-run fifth wicket stand with Ian Holland. And that game, it was just... Again, we talk about the roller coaster of cricket. That was very much a roller coaster game. It looked as though Hampshire were absolutely coasting, then Warwickshire fought back a bit, then Warwickshire collapsed towards the end when we lost the wicket to Sam Hain, and then Jeetan Patel, Ben Mike as well, Henry Brooks, the rear guard, the vanguard for the Bears, salvaged a draw. It was a fantastic game and a great advert for the county championship. But yeah, not a bad knock that, to be honest, Nye. Unfortunately, it had to be against my county, but one of them.
I've always enjoyed playing against Warwickshire. I've always done pretty well. I think I actually made my Hampshire Red Bull debut up in Edgbaston as well, and did pretty well there. So fond memories of playing at Edgbaston and against the Bears. But I think it was more of a case of, I think at the time, that, and that certainly proving last year, that they've been a leading county in Red Bull cricket for a long time now. And, that felt like the step up to me. I was facing an attack of, Stone, Hannon, Dolby, Brooks, Jeetan. You're talking certainly international quality, and whether that's at least at kind of England A side, if not, the full bifter, it was... again, as I said, it was nice to kind of prove yourself against that kind of attack and show, right, this is Division One cricket, and I feel like I can cope here and pull my weight at the very least.
And you most certainly did. Yeah, just 173. Yeah, not bad that, to be honest. And as you said, averaging over 40 in that season as well in the championship. Not half bad that, to be honest, Nye, to say the very least. Yeah. But unfortunately, as you alluded to beforehand, 2019, the Somerset game, that was your final game up until this point in 2022 that you've actually played for Hampshire County Cricket Club as a result of some very, very unfortunate injuries. And I think this is a good place actually to pick up that discussion and talk about the road to recovery ahead of this season and, the road to the return, I suppose, playing for Hampshire on the field. When did you first start experiencing those injury problems? When did it start to flare up at first?
Yeah, so it was basically one incident. It was December 2019 now, just playing five-a-side football, the bane of every cricketer's life now, trying to keep fit in the winter. Unfortunately, under no duress, really, I was completely alone on the part of the pitch I was on, and reached out for the ball, and my kind of left knee caved in once and then back out. And so at the time we were playing, you know, just a few players and staff just trying to keep fit in the winter, went down, knew I did something, kind of spoke to Cleggy, our physio, on that phone last night, and he basically diagnosed then and there on the phone, saying, look, I think you've done your ACL, mate. And as I said, once you hear those three letters in that row, as a sportsman, it's kind of panic time first and foremost. Luckily we got the best care in the world. I saw a specialist the next day and I had a surgery within a week, but it's certainly my end. It was my first ever major injury. You know, I've had a couple of stitches playing rugby and that was pretty much it. Once you hear the words ACL, you know, it's going to be 9 to 12 months out. And that's quite a big thing to process. I think fortunately that first year was a COVID year. So I think if anything, I was really lucky that I didn't feel like I'd missed out on too much, nor had I felt like my career had stalled. Because as I said, it was such an affected season. It felt like if there was ever a time to get injured, it was that one. But yeah, it's been a long road. Fortunately, re-ruptured then again down the line last season and pre-season friendly. Again, pretty innocuous circumstances. Basically picked a ball up in the field in a inter-squad T20 friendly start of the year. Felt a minor tweak in my knee. We weren't at all worried. Came off, saw the physios, thought it was a minor sprain. Went to have a scan as a precaution, and they said, look, it looks like your ACL has deteriorated over time and you've been running around without one for a couple of months. Once I heard those words, it was kind of, right, what can I do in the short term? We actually decided to try and give it a crack and play on without one. Basically braced my knee up and tried to tape it up, and got back close to playing. And then we come back to all these innocuous incidents, just literally underarmed a ball back into my S&C coach doing some fielding warm-up and tore my meniscus, and that was that. I had to go back under the knife. So it's been some kind of road, but fortunately I play cricket, not rugby or football. It's, you know, once I do get this right, it's the, you know, there's no real effect on how I can perform in the pitch so much. It's still a skill-based game and it's not going to affect my batting certainly, and there's no reason why my fielding won't be as good as it was before. It's been a long road. I've learned some things about myself. Gone through some good times and some bad times, but hopefully it will be worth it once I'm back out there on the pitch. I just need to kind of remember which end of the bat to hold it.
Yeah, exactly. And which opposition's which. I suppose it's a lot easier, obviously, because you've got two people batting and the rest of fielding. But
yeah, exactly. We're all in the same colour sometimes, though.
That's true. That is very true. In fact, here I am wearing Warwickshire yellow. Hampshire also playing yellow. But tell you what, though, it's been a very, very long road. And to be honest, I'm guessing now that you weren't expecting it to be that long. I know ACL, it is the one that you don't like to hear. It is the absolute, I mean, would you say it's the worst? Because stress fractures as well, I know this is more from a bowling perspective. We see those so often in cricket nowadays with seam bowlers. ACL's
badge of honour.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're really, really hard to recover from, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think the thing with the ACL is it's, you know, you can't function through it. Stress fractures, unfortunately, are part of cricket for whatever reason. And, you can manage that generally via workload and kind of rest. And it certainly doesn't necessarily completely stop you dead in your tracks. Obviously, with an ACL knee injury like this, you know, I've quite literally learned to walk twice again. And it kind of completely knocks you out. And it's just that stability and trust. I think that's probably why it's one of the more difficult injuries. And obviously, it's just pure length of time to get back fighting fit and kind of get your physical qualities back. But yeah, certainly, those are kind of the two. I said ACL, you don't tend to find too much in cricket just by the nature of the sport. So certainly, it's something a bit different to be dealt with. And there still are, you know, you could go into a real rabbit hole in terms of the research, and there's no right or wrong way to go about it. You know, I've had two surgeries on my ACL and they both looked quite different by two different surgeons. I think that's again part of the challenge in ACL rehabbing. But you know, I've been really fortunate. Our medical staff down here has been incredible. They've done everything they can, and you know, it just sums it up. I said I've just come back from a quick day trip to Dublin to see the absolute guru in ACL rehab. So you know, they've spared no expense, and you know, I'm in a fortunate position as a sportsman that, you know, the insurance has allowed me to see one of the best surgeons in the in Europe, at least on ACL and Andy Williams, and then been out to see Dublin to see Ender King. So if I can't get it right this time, then I've only got myself to blame.
Well, I mean, obviously, Noy, we're wishing you all the best of luck heading into this season. Fingers crossed you don't re-injure it. But a question actually which came up on Twitter, but it's also one that myself and Lucy wanted to ask you, was what motivated you, you know, during those dark times? Because it is tremendously difficult as a sports person, in particular, as a professional athlete. We're all competitive, aren't we? I say that as though I'm the professional. I'm not professional, just to make that very clear. But even, you know, any sports person, we have that competitive drive. You want to be out there showing off your skills. What has motivated you to come back to county cricket? Because were there any times where you're looking at this injury and it is a serious one? And I'm guessing that some people would say, is he going to come back, you know, necessarily to the same extent as he did do beforehand? Were there any doubts, you know, with regards to, I don't know, throwing the towel in, maybe walking away from the game of cricket? Or has that thought never crossed your mind?
No, I don't think so. Again, I think, you know, just the demands of cricket, fortunately, you know, if I was keep using rugby, a football player where I relied on my speed and my turning, and, you know, if I couldn't get back to that premium physical level, I couldn't compete at the level I was before. And, you know, luckily I don't have that barrier in cricket, and fortunately I've had Hampshire support me all the way through. And again, I think it's the natural optimist inside of me, but also, you know, a bit of self-belief, and I think just natural makeup in most professional sportsmen and women. That it's just, I think it's kind of the only way is forward. I think I like to say is that was kind of my motto throughout. You know, it was kind of at every stage, even from the day I injured it, it was kind of a plan, right? Where do we go next? There was never any kind of wallowing in self-pity. There was every day, every week, for every month, for the last 2 years, I've had something to do to improve my body and make sure I get back to where I was. And that's kind of given me such clear focus. I said it a couple of times before, you know, during that COVID year, I kind of took the break, as I'm sure other guys did in different ways. It's a bit of a blessing, really. You know, I wouldn't have had time off since I was 14, 15, you know, from cricket, you know, from school to, you know, training camps, the ECB to tours, and then, you know, county seasons to Australian grade winters to coming back. You never really get off the roundabout. But yeah, you know, back to back, certainly that, you know, the next hurdle to, and the next barrier to kind of cross is, you know, can I get back to it with my batting? You know, that's something yet to be seen. I haven't been able to get back out there and test it against bowlers. And, you know, for me, that's going to be the biggest challenge of this all is now I've got to tick off, right, the skill part. I've worked so hard on the physical end that, you know, I trust my body now and I'm in a great place and, you know, I can't do no more. It's about, unfortunately, you know, paying the bills and scoring my runs, which is what I'm built to do and what I'm here to do. And, you know, certainly in the nets, it was weird, actually. I think both times, you know, my first net back, I think it's the best I've ever batted. So I think maybe training's a little bit overrated on. I just need a sabbatical every now and again to kind of have a bit of time to myself. But yeah, I said it's, you know, the first game back is going to be, I think, certainly sitting here now, it's just going to be pure excitement. It's going back to the kind of the real crux of it all. It's just going to be exciting to get back out there on the pitch and competing with my, you know, some of my best mates on a great stage. Certainly, you know, there's kind of that mental battle in terms of can I perform at this level again? But, you know, I'm pretty confident in my ability and I think that will come with, you know, a bit of time and some application.
Well, there you go, Hampshire fans. Some very, very promising news there from Mr. Noy Donald. And again, I have no doubt that the Hampshire fans, when you do walk back onto that field, Noy, you'll get a lovely reception. You know, they're a classic club, great, great fans, very supportive, as I've experienced firsthand, actually. So, yeah, absolutely. That'll be a very, very special moment indeed when you do walk out onto that. Those 22 yards at the Aegeus
Bowl. That's right. Sometimes it feels a bit shorter than that.
I bet it does. But to be fair, you know, if you ever need it as well, you've got the runner. So if you don't want to do the running.
I wish I could build that into my contract, but I'm not, I think I might have to do that yet. Well, if I hit it well enough, I don't need to run anyway, do I? That's what I like to think.
Just sit there and hit. Like Adam Hose did that this summer with Chris Benjamin as his runner against Northants. So Hampshire fans, again, if you see that this summer, you know why. It's because of this podcast.
Exactly. That's given me the idea.
But Noel, you mentioned there about the recovery, actually. Before we touch upon the Twitter questions, because we do need to get through those, obviously. Thank you to everyone by the way, who sent those questions in. And yeah, there are some not so serious ones in there as well, to be fair, from one of your former teammates. But I'm in terms of that recovery itself, what has your rehabilitation actually consisted of? Because for any young cricketers out there or young sports people who are dealing or might have, you know, have dealt with an ACL in the past, what does it actually entail in terms of that rehabilitation? How do you go from tearing an ACL to getting back out onto a cricket field? What kind of steps and processes does that actually take?
I'll try and break it down a little bit because we could go onto this for hours and days. You know, this is an S&C's dream. I've got spreadsheets and databases deep on my testing and programs and stuff. But the basic breakdown is, you know, at time of tear, effectively, when you snap your ACL, you basically snap it in one go and usually blow something else out on your knee. So it's quite a large, your knee swells up. Sometimes they'll kind of wait for it to calm down before they operate. But unfortunately, I had to go straight in because my meniscal tear alongside my ACL, it was a what they call a bucket handle. So it flicked over and basically locked my knee into flexion. So I went straight in for surgery. So the first time around, I was in a brace out of surgery, locked at 0 degrees, which wasn't much fun. So it was dead straight, not weight bearing. So that lasted for about 2 weeks before I start kind of using crutches and start, you know, trying to bring back flexion and extension. So basically it's the initial stage, probably up to 8 weeks, is just purely management of the knee. So, you know, I was sleeping with an ice machine on. I'm sure you've seen game readies about in many sports. And also we have what was effectively called a TENS machine. So it's an electrostimulation to try and stop your muscles from wasting away. So I'd have that on my leg. So that was me sat in bed for the first month or so. Then fortunately I get back and, you know, again, I was so lucky that my literal day job is to just make sure I'm healthier. So, you know, every day I'm in the gym or with a physio. So first 8 weeks, joint management. Then after that, you basically learn to walk again. So it's, you know, real basic strength exercises and gait retraining. Trying to build back some, you know, strength. Obviously, your leg's kind of eating itself away. So it's about trying to build up some muscle mass and, you know, kind of get your movement back. And from that stage, it's basically just pure strength building. Again, focus on a bit of range of motion. But, you know, that's when we start to really hit the gym hard. That next kind of 2 to 3 months is basically just trying to build your leg back up to symmetrical as you can be. You know, something I'm still fighting now because I had a hamstring graft the first time compared to a patella graft the second time. So I'm still fighting a deficit in my left hamstring. I could go on for hours, as you can probably tell. I've read far too many medical papers that I ever needed to. And in between that, luckily, I get to do all the exciting bits. So, you know, hydrotherapy. So I did work in a pool. You know, I know Chris Wood at the minute is using cryotherapy chambers at the minute to try and, you know, rehab his ACL. But yeah, the kind of basically the last stage skills takes pretty much a back seat right until the end. And kind of the next step is then into straight line running. So usually that kind of be, depending on your sport, 4, 5, 6 months afterwards. And basically, you know, the gold standard of I'm ready to go again is multi-directional cuts. So basically side steps, if you like to think of it like that. So turning is the key thing with ACLs. And that's kind of the last part of the program. But yeah, it's very, very specific. And again, luckily there's multiple people employed to worry about all this for me. I just kind of turn up and do what I'm told to do. But certainly it's a long and pretty grueling road. It's, you know, when you're gymming 5 days a week and going home and sleeping with an ice machine on, it does take its toll, especially back-to-back injuries. But I've learned a lot about myself and my body. And certainly I've been fortunate to be able to see the kind of specialists I have. And I'm certainly in a much better place physically than I am now than I was before I was injured.
Well, no, that is excellent here. Obviously, it's a shame that has come as a result of a major injury, but that was some very, very good advice just slotted in there about listening to those experts, because some people, I know it's difficult when you're coming back from an injury and some people try to rush the process. You just have to listen to them. You know, you've got to rehab it properly. And actually, you mentioned the road to recovery there. So we mentioned about the straight line running. You mentioned about the multi-directional cuts as well. You've already been through the initial stages. Which stage you're at now, and I suppose how long do you think it'll take for you to get back to full match fitness ahead of the 2022 season? Is it before the season, during the season, towards the last stages? Where are you aiming to, you know, come back into that competition for places in a Hampshire?
Sure. I'm 8 months after my second operation now. So I'm right to that last stage. So kind of ticking on the box of the multi-directional cuts. The rough timescale usually for an ACL return to play is 9 to 12 months. I guess in a really sick way is because I did it. I was rehabbing specifically for this injury the first time and then did it again. I almost had a head start. So I feel like I'm in a really good spot in that sense. I've kind of been through it all before. So I should be fully fit to go, ready for the start of the season. I'm hoping to be kind of cleared to take part in our little preseason tour, which is in middle of March. There may still be some restrictions for me in that, but ultimately when, you know, certainly when April hits, there should be no reason why I'm not ready to compete for my spot. And then it kind of comes down to more what the team needs and where the club sees how much time I kind of need in the second team, or, you know, match fitness under my belt before I'm kind of considered for selection, really. But yeah, 2022 season, I'll be ready to go.
Good news for the Hampshire faithful. That very, very exciting times then. And talking of the Hampshire fans, I think that's a nice transition actually into our Twitter questions, because the first of our questions for this week's episode actually is from Gary Oliver, who is a massive Hampshire fan, always gets some very good questions in. So thank you again, Gary, for sending in this question. His question for you, Nye, is surrounding your role actually for Hampshire heading into this season. Do you aim to play in all formats for Hampshire this season? And in terms of preferred batting position, where do you like to be in the different formats? What's your absolute ideal spot across the three cricketing formats?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, it's definitely to play all formats. It's always been a big part of my kind of feeling like I love playing red ball cricket. I think it's actually one of my strengths, and T20 certainly is something where, you know, as a professional sportsman, that's what you live for. We're playing in front of, you know, 15,000 at the Aegeus Bowl on a Friday night. Like if that doesn't get you going, then you're probably in the wrong job. So, you know, certainly for me, I want to be back and playing all formats at some point. I appreciate there may be a bit of time to be served and some match fitness to be gained, but certainly I want to be back there as soon as I can and competing for Hampshire and hopefully trying to win some trophies. On the batting position front, the diplomatic answer is I'll bat where I'm told to. Certainly in red ball, I think you're just naturally where I can do the most damage and where my game suits is slightly lower down in that batting order. I think, you know, long term, I kind of want to be at that. I think in English cricket, your best batter bats at four. So as close to that as possible. You know, in the short term, you know, five or six is probably what suits me and the team the best. So I think that'll be kind of quite a natural fit once I'm back there. And then in T20, I certainly want to open the batting. I feel like in terms of the setup of our team and squad, I certainly offer something that not many other guys can at the top of the order there, in terms of trying to kind of get out in front of the game and be that hitter in between a James Vince and a Darcy Short, for example, last year. I certainly think that's a great role that I can play and I'm suited for. And certainly, I think a big part of why Hampshire brought me down here to kind of really be that aggressor at the top of the order. But, you know, I'm a professional batter at the end of the day. I need to have some flexibility. So I'll bat wherever I can fit in the team and do whatever I'm told to do.
Good answer. And again, diplomatic. And the right answer as well. You've got to think of the team as opposed to yourself first. And this next one, this is from your brother.
Here we go.
Yeah, this is an interesting one from Gav. His question for you, Noy, is with regards to a net session. And he said, ask him about the time
already.
When I cleaned him up at the Nets 2 weeks ago. What's the backstory behind this?
Well, I was basically home, fortunately, for the weekend. So, again, in our local cricket club, we have one indoor lane. So I thought I'd go down and show my face. And I think it was my brother and a couple of other guys there. So I was, you know, trying to help out and give him some pointers. And, you know, Gav's obviously been back in the Nets trying to rev himself up for the season. So I thought, you know, what brotherly thing to do is kind of give him a little bit of false hope. And I thought I'd miss a straight one pretty early on. And, you know, here he is still talking about a couple of weeks after. So I feel like I've done my job there by letting him have one.
What a good brother. Helping him out with a free wicket.
Yeah, exactly. Something he can talk about in the pub with his mates at least, isn't it?
Got out a professional cricket
or on podcast
or on a podcast. Yeah,
he's got a few out, so don't start him off.
Well, talking of professional cricketers, this final one actually of our Twitter questions, this was actually messaged by Callum Taylor, a a former teammate of yours at Glamorgan County Cricket Club. And when I learned the backstory behind this, it was absolutely hilarious. So just for the listeners out there, we do need the context of this.
But yeah, Cal was your last guest, wasn't he? I think I missed that one. I haven't listened to anything he said. Has he been a guest before?
Yes, he has. He was on today, actually.
Yes. Oh, there we go.
Yep, we did the recording today.
Sorry, I've jumped the ship there. I thought I saw you mention something.
Although by the time this one has been released, that one will have been released.
There we go. So I haven't completely ruined anything. You don't need to bleep that out.
The chronology is absolutely fine on that one either way. But Callum's Taylor for Unai is, which professional cricketer was your best tenant at Glamorgan?
Well, I'm not sure I could. I've had a few in my time. Funny enough, I'm about to sell that flat in Cardiff. I think it would be remiss of me to pick any one of them above the other because they're all pretty average. I'm gonna stay out of this one. I've had a few in my time, and between themselves, I'm sure there's a rank there. I think Cal probably likes to think he's up there, but there's certainly it's more about who's fighting for bottom spot than there is top spot.
Well, it's funny you mention that because Cal wanted you to say him.
Yes, I've got to say he's certainly not the worst. I'll give him that one. That was something to fight for. It's getting into controversial territory now. These are still my mates who I speak to, so I don't want to dox anyone kind of live on air. You have to try and dig around over the next few months.
We'll find out one by one who's been in that flat in Cardiff. Yeah. We'll find out. So I had no clue about that when he brought that up. I was like, a flat in Cardiff?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually.
It is. It's an excellent question.
Very good question. Yeah.
And to be fair, Callum was an excellent guest as well. Thoroughly enjoyed the podcast with him. So big up to Callum Taylor.
He's back in Australia, is he? Living
there? Yeah, in Queensland, the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
Living the good life.
It's all right for some, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I said that actually on the podcast to him. But yeah, fantastic, fantastic bloke. And yeah, that's pretty much it, to be honest, for the Twitter questions, Nye. Unfortunately, listeners, Lucy has had a lot of internet issues, so she won't be joining us for the concluding segment of tonight's podcast, but everyone's favourite Welsh co-host will be back on one of the future episodes of TCCP, so watch out for her in one of the future episodes. But Nye, to wrap up tonight's episode of TCCP, I suppose we have to talk a little bit about 2022, because obviously this could be your comeback season, fingers crossed that it is, all goes well with your recovery. What are your aspirations with the club heading into this season? Have you got any specific targets, goals, ambitions per se? Are you just focused on getting back and just playing and enjoying yourself, I suppose, after a couple of years off with that ACL injury?
Yeah, certainly. It is literally just that. It's getting out there again and kind of doing what I was born to do, or I feel like that way, and just go out there, enjoy it and spend some time back out in the park. Look, there's obviously goals and targets I've set myself, I'm not going to sit here and say I want to score 1,000 runs or average this much. It's more about getting back out there, proving to people I can still do what I used to do, and playing as many first team games as possible across all formats. I think, as a club, as proven last year, we're trying to win it all. I think with our couple of signings, we've shown some real intent, with Ross Whiteley being signed as some real firepower for our middle order. And then Ben Brown obviously coming available on short-term notice and being able to land him. Those guys have got both, especially, Ben, he's gone really under the radar with that record. I think he averages almost 40 in Red Bull with 20 hundreds. And Ross, as you need to see, in that 100 final, we've signed guys of top caliber. So, we're basically, it's a win or bust to some extent. We were one wicket short of winning the championship last year, which left a pretty bitter taste in the mouth. And, it probably felt like in T20s, even though we kind of made it to finals day, we certainly didn't show anywhere near what we're capable of. So, as a club, we're pretty ambitious this year, and it's certainly a pretty exciting sign time to be involved. And there's going to be a few battles for spots to get in the team, but that's what, top end professional sport's about. So no, I can't wait to get back out there and hopefully enjoy a bit of time in the sun.
Well, no, it goes without saying, obviously myself, Lucy, Joe as well, here at the County Cricket Podcast, wishing yourself and Hampshire all the very best of luck heading into this season. Honestly, 2022, you just look at the teams, and not all of them are complete either so far. We've still got some overseas names who are to be announced in due course. It has just got the makings of a tantalising summer of cricket here in England and Wales. So wishing you all the very best of luck. And Yeah, it'll be nice to see you back on the field as well. First time since 2019. Absolutely. Try not to score too many against Warwickshire. I mean, that 173 did, still remember that from time to time. So thank you for that memory. But I think that's pretty much it, to be honest, for tonight's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. Just before we say our final goodbyes for tonight's show, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
No, just follow me on the usual socials. But thanks for having me, guys. It's much appreciated, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
You're more than welcome to, Nye. Absolutely. I've loved it. I know Lucy will have loved it as well. I know she wasn't here for the entirety, unfortunately, due to Wi-Fi issues, but it's been a really interesting
all that power running through the fish tank.
Yeah, for the listeners out there, Lucy has a fish tank, a rather prominent fish tank.
You have to release the clips.
As proof. But no, that's a fantastic place to wrap up what's been a thoroughly fascinating episode of the County Cricket Podcast. So from us two here at TCCP for tonight's show, that is pretty much it from us for tonight. So to all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we will see you on the next one.